Okay. Welcome, everyone, to the... Thank you. Welcome to the December 17th regular board meeting. We are not the personnel commission. Are you good? Okay. Do we have consensus on the order of business? Dr. Prater.
Yes, I would like to request that we remove item 9.02, resolution number 10-19-20, delegation of authority. That resolution needs some additional work.
Okay. Next, we have some minutes to approve. First up is the minutes of November 14, 2019. Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Ms. Frame. Any corrections, additions, discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. And then the minutes of November 19th.
I move approval of the minutes of November 19th.
I'll second. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by me. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Our student representatives to the board, thank you for coming out tonight. I know it's a really busy time for you folks. So if you would fill us in on exactly what a busy time it is, please.
So this week is our finals week at Morro Bay, and it starts tomorrow because it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And leading up to finals for, like, the last 2.5 weeks, we've been doing a spirit day every day, and we call it the 12 days of winter, like counting down to finals. So we started it the day that we got back from Thanksgiving break, and we have not stopped doing spirit days since then. So it's kind of been super busy, like, with that and also, like, studying for finals and stuff. And we do days like today was crazy sock day. So Jen and I are both wearing crazy socks right now. You cannot see because their feet are under the table. And then yesterday was karaoke, and, like, it's just little things like that to get people to, like, not be so sad during this time. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because everybody's really stressed about finals, and it's just kind of, like, some winter cheer, but, like, non-denominal winter cheer, you know. So, and then today, after school, we did our event that we do every year called Cocoa and Cram, which is when we hold, like, a study session in the library with hot chocolate so that everybody can get ready for finals since they start tomorrow. And that was a big success. Like, it was packed in the library. Like, there was a bunch of people, and we all studied, got things done. And then, what else am I saying? Is that it? Okay.
So yeah, the rest of the week is just finals, and then right when we come back to school, we have our Decade Spirit Week, which leads up to our sock hop dance. So we start in the, like, 80s and 70s, and then we go down until we get to the 50s for our sock hop on Friday. So we have, like, friendship bracelet making and jazzercise and bubbles in the quad and just fun stuff like that. And then we are already starting to plan that because it's the first week after break, and it's going really, really good. And then we have our administrative building just got finished at our school, and it looks so good. And there's landscaping, and there's grass and rocks. We have grass, and you can walk on the grass, and it's so good. But they're still using the old office right now, but they said that they'll be in the new office after break, so that's going to be really exciting, and it's a nice little thing just to look at and be like, oh, like, that's what it's all going to eventually look like, and there's, like, method to all the, like, madness that's happening right now. But overall, it's going pretty good. Life's Going. Good.
Good. Yeah. Well, thank you for your report. Usually we invite you to stay, but tonight we're going to invite you to head out and study because this is a lot going on. We don't want any of that sadness. We want you to have plenty of time and get it over with and enjoy your winter break. So thank you so much. Thanks a lot for your report. I wanted to point out that Mrs. Roger, our board clerk, is not present tonight. She's under the weather, and Mr. Buckman will be serving as clerk this evening. I should have done that earlier. So next, we have Pacific Beach High School program highlights.
Mr. Yeah, Mason. We have Ms. Cooper here with some students from Pacific Beach High School to tell us the goings-on there these days. Please.
Hi, everyone. Good evening. Happy holidays. We put together just a short PowerPoint for you. I'm going to let the students introduce themselves.
I'm Brandon Mitchell.
I'm Ray King.
And I'm Jada Ramos.
What all three of these fabulous people have in common is they are all seniors, and they are slated to graduate in the next few weeks. Yay. So they will have a 2020 celebration. Woo-hoo. With a diploma. And they all happen to be student senators, so I'm sure Mr. Prater recognizes these wonderful faces. They come with me to the student senate meetings that happen every 2 months now. All right, so I'm going to be the slide clicker, and I'm going to hand it over to them so they can share our program highlights.
Okay, so one of the greatest things about Pacific Beach is probably the fact that we get a lot more individualized attention, and I know for a lot of people that's a problem at the high schools that we transfer from, but that's simply because we all benefit in different learning environments. I know for me personally, it's been a great experience for me. It has allowed me to reach this path where I'm going to graduate early instead of looking at myself and thinking, I don't know if I'm going to graduate. It's allowed me to be a lot more successful as a person, and it's definitely allowed me a lot of room to grow.
One of the really great things that happened at the school is because of so little amount of students and how teachers are able to connect with all students as well, is the connections that all individual people can have with each other. There is no real social barriers, even though there can be certain groups of friends and such, just as you would see in any school environment. It's not as cliquey, and I'm sure that all of us here could say is that we can all kind of feel free to be around a whole bunch of different groups of students around the school, talk to whoever we wish to. It's very easy to do school projects because even if you don't talk to someone completely, everybody is just so welcoming and friendly to be around.
The best thing about Pacific Beach High School is there is no judgment, none. You come there and you feel so comfortable, you feel like you can just lay your whole self out as a person and, you know, kind of feel like you're at home. I have a great relationship with all my teachers, my principal, even the attendance lady. I love her. She's great. She's amazing. PB has really helped me grow in all aspects, as a person, as a student, my attitude. It's just really helped me grow in every way possible. And I couldn't be any more happier that I switched schools. No offense to, like, so high or anything like that, but I'm the type of kid where I need that one-on-one, and I need to feel as if I'm secure in my learning and not that I'm kind of just, like, what's the word I'm looking for? It was on the top of my head, now it's gone. Well, anyways, what I'm saying is I don't feel like a burden, basically, asking for help and keeping having to come back or asking teachers to stay after school because there's just so many students. I feel like I can ask for help when I need it as many times as I need it, and it's a great feeling.
The results you're seeing up on the projector right now are the results from our Youth Truth Survey. We had 100% participation, And we are really proud of our results just because it goes to show that a lot of us are dedicated students, regardless of what ideas the community may currently have of us. Almost all of us are really dedicated to our studies. We want something in life, and we've always set goals for ourselves, that we can accomplish. And I think one of the best things about those results is probably the fact that our college and career readiness is so like high. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that we have like portfolio, and that's a class that those of us that are close to graduation, all of us have to go through of it. Those of us that are close to graduation have to take this course, and what's required of it is a lot of things that help us in life. Like, we have to make a resume for it. We have to do job applications and a job shadow as well, which is, ideally, it's something that you are looking into a career for. And it's overall just a really great learning experience. It prepares us a lot more than most students are generally our age. So I think the other great thing about it is the fact that it shows us too that just we don't necessarily have to go to college to be successful. It shows us that there are careers we can choose to study in that don't require us to just take those 4 years. Like the ideas that a lot of schools have nowadays, I feel personally, I knew I didn't want to go to college. I'm not the studying person, not to say I'm a bad student, but I just knew personally it wasn't my path. I wanted to get to working as soon as I could. So for me, being able to graduate early and being so ready for my career after high school, it's really been beneficial for me as a person, and I'm sure it'll be the same for everyone else there.
And Brandon, what is that? What are you going to be doing in the future?
I enlisted into the Army, and I'll be shipping out on February 4th, so wow. Yeah.
Some of the community projects that we are doing currently is the Hot House Project, the Farm Project, and that's actually kind of good.
You could preview this one for us if you want.
Hmm? And the dual enrollment. I don't remember what that one is.
It's okay, Jake. Do you want to talk about the Hot House?
I can talk about the Hot House, yes. The Hot House currently is where students will prepare ideas throughout a quarter where they come up with a business proposal where they will, in order to, give me a sec, please. Sorry. They propose ideas in order to get themselves ready for...
I'm going to give you some keywords.
I'm sorry.
So it's a really great opportunity. It's an entrepreneurial project. So Cal Poly Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship has partnered with our school, and we take our students to the Hot House, which is in downtown off Hygera, and they pitch business plans that they create from the ground up. It starts with an idea. Recently we had a student who created renewable plastic building bricks that he was going to manufacture in South Africa, in Durban, South Africa, and build affordable housing for developing countries. He came up with this idea. We have other students who just want to create their own restaurants. We had a student who wanted to make a renewable carbon fiber skateboard that was basically indestructible. And so these students who maybe haven't experienced a lot of success through public speaking in former classes, they're presenting in front of adults. They show up in suits and ties, and they get to share an idea that they created from the ground up. And Ray has experienced this. What was your idea?
I didn't do this class. I did one with Farm, which was a group project on coming up with an idea for a meal where we could help fund the Farm Project, which I could do a better talk on because that was the one class I did take.
Well, and I'm also going to plug another program we just started with Ray's class, and that's a partnership with Slow City Farm. It's an organic farm right off of the 101, if you've been out there. A lot of car dealerships are taking over that space. It's just a couple of acres left for true city farming. And our students get to walk out to that farm, till the earth, plant the seeds, and harvest. And we're starting to create a seasonal food box which we would like to invite any of you to purchase and participate in. We just had our local winter health holiday farm box. So think of your root vegetables and seasonal braising greens. Our students from the ground up did every level of that box. We even did the marketing. We failed because we didn't tell you about it.
Yes.
So we failed with our marketing. Mr. Dowler was quick to remind me, what about the school board? All right. I am now going to hand it over to Jada. Thank you, Ray. Talk about dual enrollment.
All right. Well, dual enrollment, you can go to high school and college at the same time. And what's really cool about our school is you kind of pick your hours. You can get up to at least 40 hours a week by working with going to our school, which is really great. I go from 8 to 140, and I'm still able to work 20 hours a week because I'm a minor. So, and that's great. And with Cuesta and everything, at our school, we really make sure you do that. Like, we help you sign up, and we get you kind of started on the financial aid, but then you have to finish that yourself. And in portfolio, we do a lot of stuff involving Cuesta, and portfolio is great because you literally get to map out the whole future that you believe you want, and it's kind of like having your own little roadmap as you go on in life and as you attend Cuesta, and maybe if you want to go to a four-year after that.
Last slide, which all of you are familiar with.
You want to talk about it right
now? I can do that because I'm almost done with it. That's something I know. Our portfolio project is where, as Brennan had said earlier, it's where we are getting ready for our after-school life, where we are making applications towards colleges, making resumes for our future jobs, and even just making, like, letters to introduce ourselves to future employers and such. I'm currently nearly finished with all of my portfolio, which is great. But it's definitely a really great class because as someone who didn't know a single thing about this because of how my parents work, they are all independent artists, so it's very hard for me to get that understanding of how to make a resume or how to reach out to colleges as being the first person in my family who is actually planning to go to college. I had no idea or, like, anything about how to go forward with this process. So having this ability to make a book that has absolutely everything I need to know and will show myself to anybody who needs to know it is a really great opportunity.
And also another good thing about portfolios, some kids growing up, they don't have a good role model when it comes to working and when it comes to the future and, you know, being a responsible adult and, you know, having what you need to provide for yourself and as you grow up in life. Portfolio is kind of like, you know, that role model that you look at that makes you think, okay, well, I want a future and I want to know what I have to do to get there. And it's like a big push. It's not a huge push, but it's like a nice little, you know, to help you get there. Because some people don't have that motivation. And I feel like when you're in portfolio and you're looking at all the occupations you could pick and you're looking at all the schools you can go to and all these amazing things you could do when you get out of high school, it makes you want to do things. It makes you want to be great. And I feel like portfolio is a really great I feel like all schools should have it. Portfolio is great. I feel like it can be a great push for everyone.
One more thing about portfolio is it is a graduation requirement for us, so we all have to go through it at some point, and it depends upon the on the pace that we're going at. And PB, we have what's called an IW class, and one of the greatest things about it is for students, doesn't matter when you come in, if you really want to graduate early and you have a goal set for yourself, the way to reach that goal is going to be through the IW classes, because we also offer direct instruction, which is like your generic normal class. You sit in class, take notes, and you're with a teacher. But IW is independent work, and we finish it all at our pace. We can still get help when we need it, but to reach our graduation goals, it's important to get everything done, as well as with portfolio. It helps us also apply for scholarships. It prepares us for a lot of things, and it's definitely an important thing to have. And like Jada said, I feel it should be offered at other schools. It's definitely helped all of us get prepared for what's going to happen after we graduate. And yeah.
And one more thing, sorry. And we also have like these really great classes that prepare us for like the real world, like W-4s and everything like that. And we have econ class and we get a budget project. Like we have these classes that I never, like, there's these things out in the world that you have to do when you grow up that I never knew you had to do until I came to this school, and it just showed me so many things. I was like, oh my gosh, being an adult must suck.
Like taxes.
Yeah, but it's
not bad.
And also, our consumer math class is great. Like, we learn about car insurance and health insurance and everything like that, and how to map everything out. So I think that should also be offered at other schools too, like real world classes, because I feel like that will help prepare all these students everywhere.
It's like how I didn't know how to do taxes at all.
Thank you so much for your time. It is an absolute honor to show off what we have. We love what we do at PB, and we love our students. So thank you for your time tonight.
So don't go away yet, because we're going to see if the board has questions or comments.
Oh, of course,
and
of course.
And do please let us know the information. I'm sure we'd all like to know about the farm boxes, yeah. You know, have that information. So this was wonderful to hear from you. So I'm going to start with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, then Mr. Unger, then Mr. Buckman. We'll just go down the line.
So about that farm, it looks like a little encroachment is happening with the city around the farm. How will you solve that problem?
Well, I'm not currently in farm.
I don't think you are.
We were last year, but this year is when we started the box. Do you know much about it?
So
we'll go back to it.
The farm program, the city has a 30-year lease on that particular plot.
We want you to get close to the mic.
So that particular plot of land has a 30-year lease, so we're good for that particular farm. But there's going to be mixed-use housing all around it, which is great, low-income housing. But we are set for our holiday food box. The next one should be in the spring, so a lot of spring veggies.
Okay.
It's $28. And we will be doing the marketing. You see that was all student-driven.
Yeah.
A student even designed our school logo of the bear. Yeah, someone who just left us to go to another school, but she left us with a great design.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing about that. Anything else, Catherine? Okay. Mr. Unger?
So tell me about a little bit more about the dual enrollment. I know that at some high schools, the students are actually in class on that campus. Do you do that as well as have an opportunity to go to Cuesta and take classes at Cuesta? And how does that count toward the graduation requirements?
Don't we get high school credit and college credit? Do you want to go ahead and take that? Yeah, and for that, you also get high school credit and college credit. And I know if you do dual enrollment, it's free.
Does it take place on our campus? With the Get Focused class?
Oh, yeah, with the Get Focused class, it does. But I'm not sure if you're not taking that class, does it? Yeah.
So to follow up on what Jada said, so we have a class called Get Focused, Stay Focused, and it's going to be for our spring semester, quarter three, quarter four. And students are going to take it on our campus and get 3 credits of high school English credit. Uh-huh. But it triples, so they could get up to 9 credits of college credit. In terms of the online enrollment class, it's an introduction to online learning that we're going to be offering. They can get 1.5 high school credit and a half credit of college credit. We also have a student who just enrolled at Cuesta who's going to be taking culinary arts. He can earn up to 12 credits of electives because the transfer rate is a really good deal on his behalf. Did that clarify?
Yeah, and so I was going to ask you. The consumer math classes. By the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, but one of the popular classes at Cal Berkeley at Berkeley is an adulting class, because they realized that college students were doing exactly what you were talking about, graduating from a major university and not having the kind of skills that they needed to have to be successful adults. And so they're learning all the things that you guys are learning now. So that's really exciting. Well, congratulations. I think we're all really excited about PAC Beach.
Thank you.
Mr. Buckley.
Yep. So Chris and I are on the same track with the dual enrollment. I guess my question is going to be, can somebody tell me which classes right now are dual enrollment? I heard English. Are there others?
So the Get Focused, Stay Focused class is going to be English, and the Introduction to Online Earning can offer electives or English credits. There's a great deal of writing and submitting essays online, so it's going to be helping them develop a 10-year career plan. So again, with this adulting, it's a lot of our programs are focused on that and preparing them for life outside of high school.
So is there work towards, or are there other core classes that you might be able to bring on board?
Mr. Dowler and the whole staff is really focused on trying to increase this relationship and offer more classes throughout the year. So stay tuned.
Okay. And I need help with my adulting book. So if one of you that took that class, I could really use your help.
You can take references from mine.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just want to acknowledge my son who graduated from Pacific Beach, I think 18 years ago. I'm trying to do the math. But you hit it right on the head. It's this relationship between students and each other, and faculty and students and staff and students. And a teacher named Dan Kirk was teaching at PB, and he connected with my son, and it was such a great fit. He loves PB. I'd also observe the only people who have a mixed up or idea of what Pacific Beach is are people who do not have contact with kids and who went to this school or have been to the campus or been to one of your graduations, which are fantastic. And if they did, they would know. It would dispel all those things. And lastly, during the few years we had mock trial at Pacific Beach, you would just see these astounding students would do it 1 year, kids like you all, and they would get up there and do mock trial presentations which rivaled Atascadero, Templeton, places where you start in eighth grade, seventh grade doing mock trial. It's just a wonderful pool of talented, incredible people. Students and teachers, and as I'm always pushing Mr. Dowler and the board, we need to keep finding things for PB to do because it's an amazing place, and thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, and we'll very much look forward to seeing you at graduation. We love your graduation.
And I have a quick question. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have, like, any power over this, but I know some of the kids who go to our school, they want to be able to attend their old schools, like proms and homecomings, because we don't have, like, some kids, like, look forward to that, and some kids don't, but that's, like, for, like, some of the girls, that's going, they're like, oh, my God, I want to be able to go to prom, but they don't want to have to find someone to take them. They want to be able to just do that at their old home school. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think that would be pretty cool for PB because our school is just too small to do something like that. Sure. So I think it'd be really cool if the other kids would be able
well,
to do that.
Well, I see Dr. Prater making notes over there, and as he should with such a question, and it is something that we'll look into. Dr. Prater, do you have comments at this time?
Yeah, we have discussed this in Student Senate as something of interest. And we'll continue. Maybe that can be part of your legacy of paying it forward in your annual recommendations this year, that we could then take those goals, those interests, and operationalize them for the following spring or in terms of prom. Could we make it happen this spring? Well, let's talk about it in Student Senate. That's where those things happen. So yeah, I'm open.
Even if I graduate, can I still be there?
Jada, you are a tough. This is tough. Again, Student Senate is the ideal forum to have these conversations. So, Ms. Cooper, hold me to it, would you?
All right.
All right.
I'll hold you to it, too, even if
you're not. Data, I know you will.
Thank you so
much. Did a great job.
Thank
tonight.
You so much for coming.
Yeah. Thank you.
I understand. Thank you. Thanks for taking the time. Okay, this is the time of our annual board reorganization. So at this time, I'm going to do this in the appropriate order, if I can make sure I'm doing this, well, at least what's on the agenda. So the first item, I guess, is president, is to determine the president for next year.
Yeah?
Mr. Unger.
It's my, you know, thinking about the years I've been on the board, we have had a tradition of elevating the clerk to the president. But my understanding is that Mrs. Roger, well, she's not here, first of all, but that's not something she's interested in doing. And frankly, I've been really pleased with your leadership, and I would like to nominate you to continue to be president and break tradition.
Thank you. We have a motion and by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Millar. Any discussion?
That Ellen takes this job dangerously seriously, so we need to monitor her well-being for the next year, but that's all I want to say.
Okay, Mr. Millar, are you directing that to me? Because I've been the source of so many questions. I'm so sorry. I just want to say that Ellen has been, as all the board members, incredibly helpful to me to learn the ropes, and so I appreciate the diligence and dedication that you have shown any questions that I've asked. So.
Well, thank you. Let's just take a vote and have this part over with. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? So there will be no changing of the seating here. The next position is clerk, and I just wanted to say that although Mrs. Roger is not present tonight, she has indicated an interest in continuing the team we have. That works out. And Mr. Millar.
Well, I have a question and then a nomination, but does this mean we can skip 5.02?
Yes, please, which okay. I'm very, yeah, I did. So. I told Dr. Prater I didn't want that under, anyways.
Well, I would like to nominate Marilyn Roger to continue as your clerk provisionally. I think we have to make sure she's willing to take that assignment and probably need to perhaps entertain the motion with a proviso that we'll make sure it's okay and ratified at the next meeting.
All right. I think that's possible. Is that your understanding? Is that something we can?
I spoke with Marilyn today, and since she was feeling awful, and I just wanted to get a sense of where she was at, and since we're talking about committee assignments, we're talking about a lot of things organizationally tonight, and I asked her, and she feels that she's going to get over this health hump that she's struggling with and be back on her feet. And she's very optimistic for 2020. And I said, is there anything you'd like me to know? And she said, well, I'm definitely interested in maintaining the clerk position as something I feel I can be committed to. And so she did let me know that this afternoon.
Okay. Dr. Eisendeth,
I also had a chance to speak with Marilyn today. She was very busy, I guess, talking on the phone with all of us. But and she indicated that this is very important to her and that she would very much like to carry on in this task. And I would like to second that motion.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Dr. Eisendreth Rogers. Any further discussion? So your motion is to elect Marilyn with the, and then
nominate
kind of
and
it's
been
the,
second
confirm
and then
it at the next meeting.
Yeah. Okay. And hopefully she'll have an opportunity to be here and ratify what we are doing to her.
Okay. So. All right. Any further discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. All right. Thank you. I will say I very much appreciate your trust and confidence in me. So we're skipping 5.02. Thank you. Okay, next is 5.03, adopting the 2020 board meeting calendar. Dr. Prater, your light is on. You're presenting this, it says, but do you have anything to to present?
So when we adopt the calendar a year out, beginning in January and going till December, what we do as a executive team is we try to anticipate issues, we try to anticipate places throughout the year that we've learned to be particularly onerous or complex. And so this calendar reflects that. By no stretch is it a perfect calendar, but I think it identifies a pattern that the board has sort of followed. There's no aberrations in here that we haven't adopted in the past, and so what you have here are a few of the tighter months where there's one board meeting, like December and January and April, but by and large you have a typical month would be two board meetings, first and third, with a study session in between. That's the typical pattern. And the difference would be the month of April, where we come back from spring break. Spring break is that strange place this year. And some people said, well, why don't we move the study session so it's not in the same week as the board meeting? And we thought about that, but the challenge, of course, is we were looking at some of those other issues, like developing the LCAP goals in anticipation for May. So we know that April is staff time to really take all that feedback and all the work that we've all done, feedback from the board, and start really getting ready for the LCAP first reading in the first week of May. So it allows staff time in the last 2 weeks of April to kind of get it's crunch time for us. So by putting the board meeting on the 14th and the study session on the 16th does a few things. One, it compresses it into the 1 week. It buys staff time 2 weeks following that to get work done. And if we still need board feedback on LCAP or anything along those lines, we have that ability to do that in April. So that is the one place that I feel is a bit unusual. And then in June, we're recommending we replicate, this of course is your call, but replicate the work we did last summer where the board workshop, or like I like to call it a retreat, to develop board priorities, being in between the two board meetings in June. So June 2nd is where you approve the budget and the LCAP. Then fresh from that, the following Monday, the 8th of June, you would then, having all that inside of your heads and to be able to then set direction for the following year. And then we bring closure to the year June 16th. And then we kind of catch our breath. Now staff, what we do following the June 16th, June 8th and June 16th meetings is we have 6 weeks to get all of that in place. So we're like ducks on the water. Our feet are going like crazy in July to get that work ready for the start of the year in August. So the one meeting in July is July 16th, which is a study session. That is an actual requirement if the board is to continue on their current pattern. So there is the year, and I know that Mr. Unger has a question and regarding the coast and the city sharing of duties. But Mr. Unger, please.
So, yeah, I cannot vote for this calendar as it's presented. And the reason is that in the fall of 2020, basically from November 3rd until February, there won't be any meetings on the coast, and I can't live with that. I think it's important for us to continue to share meetings between the coast and the city. And by the way, I'm really happy to have the meetings here at Laguna. I think it's really convenient for people on the coast. Not as convenient, of course, as having meetings there. But I'm especially thinking about the opportunities we're going to want to have to get feedback from parents about the dual immersion program. As I said, I can't live with the schedule the way it is without some additional meetings on the coast from October to basically February.
So, Dr. Prater, is this schedule as presented, is it following past practice? Is it the same number of meetings on the coast? I mean, I'm getting some context here.
Yeah, we have... Since I've been here, we have about 6 meetings a year on the coast and approximately 10 meetings, maybe 12 meetings in the city. Like I did express this to Mr. Unger, I think it is a really important conversation because we are opening a dual immersion program at Baywood. So we have 6 meetings scheduled for the coast next year, and that's been a pattern over the last 5 to 7 years. But to Mr. Unger's point, there's nothing that would prohibit us from, we have a September 15th and an October 20th meeting out on the coast, Del Mar and Loams. And then in November and December, we are back in the city, and it would be perfectly okay. This would be the night to do it. To consider moving the November 3rd or 17th meeting, or even the December 15th meeting to the coast, and that would add a 7th meeting to the coast, and it would shrink down that distance between, like as Mr. Unger said, from October to February.
If I might suggest, I think the December 17th meeting would be a better meeting to have. If we're considering an additional meeting on the coast, which again I'd like to see, and the reason for that is that November 3rd will be election night, and I think there may be interest in people sticking around town for that.
So you're thinking, if I'm hearing you correctly, the December 15th meeting,
the November 17th meeting?
Oh, November 17th.
The November 17th meeting on the coast. Yeah. Although I would be happy to do the December 15th meeting, but I think the November 17th meeting, I think, makes a little bit more sense to me.
And that would be, by pattern-wise, that would be Del Mar, but we could also do it at Loams.
Yeah, in fact, I know that it's not our practice anymore to visit different schools for board meetings, but I would frankly like to see a board meeting at Baywood, and I wonder if we could make that happen.
It's my understanding... Well, go ahead. I just thought some of our constraints had to do with the ability to set up
right and understanding
all of
those
this appropriately.
Too.
Well,
yeah, but
Baywood would be able. To, we held a really fantastic
right.
community forum there. They have all the infrastructure. We could still do it. And may I suggest, if we're going to do that, may I suggest the September 15th meeting perhaps at Baywood, because the school will just be getting off the ground and it might be an opportunity to kind of talk to people who are fresh with it. And so we could do September 15th at Baywood, October 20th at Los Osos, and November 17th at Del Mar, if that's okay with everyone.
Thank you. That would work for me. Not that I'm speaking for the whole board.
Any further discussion? Okay, so then we need a motion to adopt the board calendar as revised.
I'll move to adopt the calendar for 2020 and actually 2021 as revised.
Mr. Buck.
Just a quick question. I know in the past there was discussion, but I'm thinking within the contracts that this is not, there's no final, we have the final say, but that the calendar is developed with the associations, with their input or nothing?
Yeah, no, we negotiated the rights include them in the conversations, right. But okay. We have the ultimate right.
That's all I'm saying?
Yep.
And that's still true?
Yes.
Thanks.
Would you like to second the motion since you're there?
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We are unanimous. All right. Okay, next we are going to 5.04, which is appointing board members to committees and liaison posts. And this is presented by Dr. Prater.
Yes, thank you. We have several committees that have been part of our practice, and I have put together what I would like to suggest as recommendations, and with one adjustment this year, which based on the last 2 years, I've observed the work with the district equity team committee has really shown quite a lot of promise, and we currently have Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Roger on this committee, and my suggestion this year, and again, this is your call, but my suggestion this year would be to add a third board member to this committee, and the reason for that is it's rich, and it's aligned to the board priorities, and it's deep work. It does cross over into so much that we do. And there are times, because we do hold those meetings regularly, there are times that certain one board member may not make it. And so having a third representative could be a really nice addition to this team. And so I put this before you to add a third trustee to the equity team. But like I said, our current representatives, Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Roger, have made great contributions to this team.
Okay.
And there you have it.
Well, I'd kind of like to go through these one at a time, and mm-hmm. I'm going to jump in on this one on the equity team simply because I know that Ms. Frame has attended some of these meetings. So I'm going to ask if you might be interested in serving as a third.
I would love that. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
That would be.
So, I would like to also suggest that Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Roger continue, and with the caveat once again, as Mr. Millar wisely suggested earlier, that we kind of confirm with Mrs. Roger that this is, at our next meeting, she'll simply need to confirm or affirm to us that she's interested in these things that we're putting her name forward for. At this time, I would move that our SLC USD Equity Team Committee consist of Mr. Buckman, Mrs. Roger, and Ms. Frame. I didn't even ask you. Mr. Buckman, would you like to continue in your present role?
One of the things that I'm finding so refreshing about this committee is there's students on it as well as staff. And every time I've gone, they've been able to add something. And then just also I was able to take advantage of the district's Equity Institute, and I thought that was great. So I don't know if Evelyn would like to do that as well. But I don't know if it's too late, but that was a great experience as well. But it's just, I mean, there's some real stuff going.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks, Walt. So we have a motion by me. We need a second, and then we can.
So do you want to handle, do you want to do them all? Or
I, you know,
one at a time?
I kind of want to do them one at a time because I think it's that way the public can hear about what each committee is about.
Then I'll go ahead and move the Equity Team Committee recommendation that it be Mark Buckman, Marilyn Roger, and Evelyn Frame.
Okay. All right, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, next is the ever-fascinating Central California Schools Financing Authority, which Mr. Millar is currently representing the board.
And I really appreciate Mr. Millar's commitment to this committee. It is the only committee that actually brings in revenue.
Yes, so thank
it
you.
It is a money.
You're welcome.
A money.
Money making machine.
A money making machine, and Ms. Millar has been diligent.
Julie rides herd on them, make sure we get all of our dollars out of there.
Yes. And so our current representative is Mr. Millar, and I recommend we maintain our representation on there, and it's up to the board to decide who they would like.
Well, it's also up to Mr. Millar, should he be so inclined.
Well, I feel like it's the least I can do.
for those of you who may be unaware, we are
perfect
kind of laughing
don't
about
I
this.
Yes, you do.
This meeting, although it is very important, the meetings are very,
they're
brief,
very brief
and quarterly.
So I would be happy to, and I always think of Georgie O'Connor, the first one of these I was on. He was on the Lucia Marbord, and I got there like 2 minutes late for the meeting, and everybody was leaving the high school and going to the parking lot.
I think I had that similar experience when I served on that committee.
Anyway, it's a great little arrangement that we have with Lucia Marr.
Yes, it is. It's very, it's actually very important.
But the details, you'd just be swamped with the details. So.
All right. Any further discussion? Anyone chomping at the bit to take this away from Mr. Millar? All right. Mr. Buckman.
Move that Walter can continue to contribute all the hours that he puts into that committee.
It's the least we can do.
Yeah.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, next is the SLO County School Boards Association that is currently me. Yeah.
So this group is charged with acting on matters of common concern and issues required by law, such as membership to the County Committee on School District Organization. The selected delegate, in this case, is Mrs. Sheffer, would vote on questions coming before the annual meeting of representatives of school boards in the county. There are two planning meetings each year prior to each of two countywide dinner meetings, requiring attendance of at least four total meetings. And I recommend we keep that in place. It's always important to maintain our presence there, and currently is held by Mrs. Sheffer.
I'm happy to continue doing that. And so any other discussion? We need a motion? Mr. Unger?
I move that Ellen Sheffer continue to be our representative for the SLO County School Boards Association.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, next are our bargaining liaisons.
And these are interest-based bargaining liaisons with our classified unions. We currently have Mr. Buckman representing the CSEA group and Mrs. Roger representing SEIU. SEIU signed the three-year deal, so there's 2 years without meeting, and CSEA had a two-year deal, and they'll reopen or sunshine next year. So our current members, like I said, is Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Roger.
So just to clarify, this, although this may not be active this particular, these may not be active this particular year. Should anything arise or the need come forward, then they would, should they wish to continue in this role, they would be called upon to do so.
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Buckman, this time I will ask, are you interested in continuing to serve? Okay.
Again, it was a great experience. CSEA people are just wonderful.
So I'm going to put forward Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Roger again with the caveat with regard to Marilyn, that they continue as the board's liaisons to the interest-based bargaining units.
Marilyn's sure going to be surprised. So, but
she
I
loves this.
I know she does. So I would move that we have Mark and Marilyn continue in their respective roles in the interest-based bargaining. And it's nice to see, as I always put in a plug, these two employee groups doing interest-based bargaining. If only we had all three doing interest-based bargaining. We're getting there, though.
I hope so. We'll keep working on it. All right, so we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by me. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, Tri-County Education Coalition.
This organization is composed of representatives from the California Central Coast counties of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura. It identifies common education concerns and interests among the groups and organizations affecting public education in the Tri-County area and issues position statements. My recommendation is we maintain our representation on there, and it's currently being held by Mr. Buckman.
Interested? Okay. Any discussion? And a motion, please.
I move that Mr. Buckman remain the Tri-County Education Coalition representative.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thank you, Mark. Next is our board policy subcommittee.
Yeah, this is perhaps the most hardworking subcommittee group that there is.
And in school board history.
In school board history. It is. But I can attest to prior to Mrs. McGrath being tackling this
she
particular
does all
the structure. The board policies and the revisions from Gamut were just stacking up because it was just, we didn't have a system, we didn't have a process. And so it's one of those things we just kept kind of in the dark for a while, and we're paying that price now, digging ourselves out of that. And I think we have a great process, but it's quite involved. And this process, what they do is Mrs. Sheffer and Mr. Buckman meet regularly with Mrs. McGrath to review CSBA policy recommendations prior to those coming before the full board for decisions. The subcommittee meets on an as-needed basis, but it looks like at least twice a month that they get together and review policies. So this is one of those things that I can see the wear and tear. But it's an important task, and it currently is held by Mr. Buckman and Ms. Sheffer, and I recommend we keep it going.
Mr. Buckman. All right. I feel like I'm just beginning to get it figured out. So after the past couple of years or whatever, I'm happy to continue. I would like to really speak to Ms. McGrath in terms of the work she does on this and how difficult it is gathering the information and sorting it out and all that you do to make this happen. So thank you for your work. You really carried the biggest burden on this. So any discussion? Dr. Eisenbender, you look like you really want to be on this committee. Would you like to? We need
Can
to
we
make,
move,
a motion.
Make a motion.
Yeah.
I move that we keep that consistent and that we move back with Mark and Ellen on that, in those positions.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, a second by Ms. Frain. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Mr. Buckman. I'll see you in a couple weeks. Yes. Okay, next is the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation.
Yeah, so as you know, with SB 1090, our San Luis Coastal Education Foundation has really gained not just a tremendous amount of money, but it has gained a focus, it has gained traction, and there's some excellent work coming out of that very hardworking group. And we currently have the board representative to the foundation is Dr. Catherine Eisendrath Rogers, and my recommendation is we maintain that presence on the foundation.
Any discussion? Mr. Unger.
I would. Are you good with
for
it?
Myself.
Were you going to vote? Were you going to make a motion for yourself?
No, I just wanted to say it's been a great experience, and I would look forward to continuing to serve in that place. And I take exception to Mr. Millar's comment that all the bacon is brought in by the financing authority.
Good point.
We want competitive money bringing to our district. I think that's a great thing. Mr. Unger.
Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge Mrs. Robertson, who I think, you know, has done a marvelous job. And I would remind everybody that she is considered one of the Sacramento Bee educational influencers. And that's quite a feather in our cap and hers as well. But that said, I would like to nominate Catherine to be the board representative to the Educational Foundation.
I would like to second that. So we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by me. Any further discussion? Or a lifetime or something?
Lifetime.
It says two-year. With an option to renew. So you're like a sports star. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. We did all those. We're so busy. All right. Next is item six, which is correspondence. 6.01 is correspondence. And we had received a letter via email from Gabriela Granados pointing out the good work done by some folks at San Luis Obispo High School in support of veterans. Next is public comment. This is the opportunity for all you many, many people from the public sitting out there this evening to address the board if you have something you'd like to speak to that is not on the agenda. Anyone? Mr. Buckman, have you received any yellow sheets from anyone wishing to address the board at this time? All right, thank you. Okay, we're going to go on to superintendent's updates, and first is business and budget. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, just one thing to report. We were able to work with the county and finally move the funds into the foundation account. Actually, we'll be wired in on Wednesday.
Is your
board knows,
not working?
What's that?
Is that other microphone not working?
His is working.
Oh,
mine
okay.
is not.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
why I'm using this one.
Okay.
Yes.
I just thought you were feeling particularly fond of one another.
I'm getting very close to Dr. Prater. Getting very close to Dr. Prater. Yes. Careful. No. So just so the board knows, the foundation went through a thorough process to find a financial advisor. Wacker & Associates was chosen as the firm, and so those funds will be in good hands with the foundation, and look forward to seeing some great returns, through Wacker. Other than that, we have a lot of budget to talk about tonight.
Yes, we do. All right, Ms. McGrath, please fill us in with your educational services update.
There we go. Yes, excellent. Yes, just a few things to update you on. First of all, we've been making fantastic progress with Baywood. So with your recommendation for us to further explore dual immersion program, we've had a lot of focus groups going on, getting incredible, valuable input from the community as well as the staff members. So we've had our advisory group as well as our special education group. We've had our program development group, staff members, and a group that's looking at how to ensure first through fifth grade is really incorporated and that it still feels like one comprehensive school. And our enrollment group actually just wrapped up. The draft of the enrollment plan was taken to advisory on Monday. And so the next board update, we hope to bring you that draft comprehensive plan for enrollment decisions there for Baywood. So a lot of great progress there. Huge kudos to Lisa Stevens, who is doing a fantastic job and does such a beautiful job of listening to people, hearing concerns, responding, making adjustments as needed, and just does a masterful job at that. Rick Mayfield and Don Addis have been working incredibly hard too. So thanks so much to everyone involved in that. I want to give a little shout out to Los Osos Middle School. They've had a couple of great things go on. Miss Donnelly sitting there, but two different robotics teams qualifying for state and even nationals. So super exciting to see that happening. I know we'll hear more about it. And also just a shout out to Ames Harris. So Carl Bloom did a fabulous job of organizing the California League of Middle Schools, regional banquet, and Ames Harris was honored as a regional teacher and will move on to state coming up and go to their banquet soon. So great work by Los Osos staff and really doing some great work there of continuous improvement. Quick update on the foundation. The grant process is continuing, so you'll remember that they awarded the innovation grants at the beginning of the year. The second round was grants for high school students that asked high school students if they had ideas of how to make their current school a better place to be or to learn. So it was really neat to hear some of their ideas. The next round that is out right now are teacher grants, staff grants. Those are available, $1,000 for individuals or $5,000 if they're working with a group or team. So really great work from the foundation, and our sites are feeling the impact. So, and then just also a quick note, you're going to see a PO headed your way soon about ARIES. So we're looking at a new student information system. As you may have heard, we use PowerSchools as our current student information system. We had a very large size committee last year of a really wide range of stakeholders evaluate three different student information systems, and after that they determined that ARIES was by far the superior system. So it's a elaborate move for our organization, but a really good move. It's a capable system that will offer us a lot more benefit, but it is a big change. So I just want you to know that's headed your direction, and I think a lot of people are really excited about it. Of course, there's a few nervous people as well with any kind of change that size. So just wanted you to know that'll be headed your direction soon.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger?
So I'm assuming we're going to migrate the data from PowerSchool to ARIES over the summer?
It's actually, they're starting to ask questions so that they can begin the migration kind of in the background. Coming up probably here in the spring.
Okay, and then will it require a lot of professional development for the staff that's going to be using it?
Some professional development will be needed, but it's also a really intuitive system. And I think we're finding, even like we did with our Parent Square system, that if the system is laid out in a way that users find it friendly and easy to navigate, less professional development is needed than what we've seen in shifts in the past. So some will be needed because it's a new system, but probably not as much as we imagine.
And then can I ask you just one?
Sure.
What do you think is its biggest advantage over PowerSchool?
Yeah, it's a great question. Part of it, part of it is that I think what you'll find is that it coordinates systems of all the systems that it's pulling from in a much more elaborate manner that makes it really user-friendly for teachers, for all the staff members involved in it. You'll see counselors and administrative staff, its capabilities with four-year planning, with pulling student information, actually doing some of the work that we do manually. It does it in an automated fashion and allows much deeper analysis. And the other part that we loved about it is that the system and the company itself responds to site needs and makes adjustments of the system, because right now it's, for us, it's very heavily dependent on our employees improving the PowerSchool system. And it's not a great model to have you know, an entire student information system dependent on one main person, maybe two. So we're really looking forward to a system that's more automated, that offers better opportunities for data and other analysis. In a, that's why we had such a large committee, honestly, is because it impacts a lot of groups. You know, when you look at nurses, food services, counselors, administrators, et cetera. So we had all the different groups say, look at it from your angle. And overwhelmingly, they said, by far the better system.
Yeah, I have Mr. Buckman, then Ms. Frame, then Mr. Millar.
So a quick one on the ARIES Power Tool. Is this the system that we also use for the phone calls, the mass phone calls that go out to parents, or is it integrated into that?
Different. It pulls from that student information. So we do have a lot of systems that plug in, so to speak, into that, pull information from the student information system, but it is a different system of itself.
I have, on some of the chatter that I get through my other organizations, the Power School evidently is the best one also for that pulling of information and getting the information out to parents.
Parent Square, maybe? Is that?
Yeah, Parent Square.
Parent Square,
yeah.
Good.
And my second, I just wanted to tag on to the middle school. Within the superintendent's office, the awards dinner, I think it was Monday night, was, I don't know how the food was, but I certainly know how the desserts were, because Valerie Harrigan in the office made desserts for how many people? 70? Yeah, so they looked really good.
Hey, Mr. Millar.
I was curious about Parent Square and what... Do we have any information about the interface with this ARIES system and transitioning to it? Because the few people I've talked to love Parent Square.
Great. Yeah, we're hearing a lot of positive feedback about Parent Square, and it does coordinate with it beautifully.
Good. Great. All right. Next, we have our Measure D update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, so really excited.
So really excited to hear from the girls tonight, just about you know, the new camp, you know, the new front of the school.
Yeah.
And you know, it's rare that you'll hear students rave about the new office building, right? So that's a positive, right? Positive.
Walking,
but really the best thing was when they took down the fences and the kids got to walk on the grass. So they actually have a grass area that they can sit on and eat lunch and hang out. And Kyle said when they first took it down, Kyle was standing there, and all the kids were all on the sidewalk, all around the grass. Nobody would walk on the grass. So he walked into the middle of the grass, and they all looked at him and went, "Can we?" And he goes, "Yeah." And so then they all
great.
Walked around. So it was really good. But I also wanted to give huge kudos to Chris Bonin, who's in the audience tonight, who's been not only doing his director job, but also the project manager at that site. Fantastic job finishing that. The landscape, the decisions we made to put the sidewalk around the office, the rock area, the Seven Sisters, right, all those things that have been put in place. It really looks nice, and it does. For the kids now, they can see, okay, this is what they're, you know, the J wing was one thing. Now they got the front. Now they can kind of see, okay, this is how it's all going to come together. So it's very exciting.
Great. Thank you. All right. Next, we have some public hearing items, and first is 8.01, the dedication of the right-of-way to the city of San Luis Obispo, which feels like we've been hearing about for about the last year and a half.
So hopefully, I was a little worried. I had to get my calculator out and make sure we still had two-thirds because Catherine left. So I was worried about it.
Okay.
So we're okay. Having
we're
five
good.
Is okay.
Okay. Please don't bring this back.
So this San Luis Ranch is part of that project over by Pacific Beach High School. They're putting in a new bike lane, which is actually a positive thing,
sure.
I think, for all those areas, the traffic flow, and providing some security for people riding their bikes. So we had an MOU with San Luis Ranch to begin the process. Actually did, you know, valuation of the property in terms of square footage, right? Initially, that was early on in November. Then we brought it back to the board because dedicating public land, and especially from an educational setting, there's a process. You can't just do it, right? So there's actually three steps. So the first was the MOU. The second was the intent to dedicate this property. And then tonight, finally, is the actual dedication. So you'll see this is the first part is the public hearing, which we can open. And then lastly, or next, will be the resolution to actually approve the dedication, should the board choose.
Okay. So at this time, we'll open the public hearing with regard to the dedication of the right-of-way to the City of San Luis Obispo. We will close the public hearing, and then we can, is there any board discussion? And if not, we can go ahead and entertain a motion to approve. I'm sorry. We'll move to 9.01, the resolution part of this. All right, thank you.
So again, we had to postpone it to tonight because at the last board meeting we only had four board members.
Right.
So
right.
You have to have at least a two-thirds majority of the board pass this resolution.
Okay. So now we're ready to have a motion
you
and
can bring
vote
it back
on the resolution.
If you would.
Anyone? Mr.
I'll move
Unger?
Approval of Resolution 9.01, actually Resolution 08-19-20, approving the proposed dedication of right-of-way upon real property for use by the City of San Luis Obispo.
I'll second that.
Right. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Buckman. This is a resolution. We need a roll call vote, please. Ms. Dawson.
Mr. Buckman? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Sorry.
Ms. Frame? Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Ms. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
All right. We have a vote.
We're good.
Done. All okay. Right. And then just as a reminder, 9.02, we have pulled, will appear at a later date. 9.03, a resolution with regard to the developer fee report and five-year findings. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so after the end of the year, we actually have 6 months for the board to approve the developer fee report. And I try to update our five-year plan as well when we do that each year. This is something that comes every single year. We, as part of the process of this too, just so the board knows, this was an informational item back in November. Mm-hmm. So that the public could see it, have access to it. If they had any questions, ask us. The resolution kind of spells out everything that the developer fee report needs to have, as well as the five-year plan. So basically what it does is it shows every penny that was spent for each project, and this was for the 18-19 school year. It shows what the balance, beginning balance, ending balance, if we made any refunds to somebody who maybe was, you know, gonna build a house and decided not to, they get refunded their funds. And so it goes through those. So developer fees are supposed, of course, tied to growth projects, things where we're seeing growth. And so in our district in particular, we're seeing huge growth at San Luis Obispo High School. So that school has jumped to over 1,600 students now over the past 3 years. So, you know, it's an interesting dynamic of a kind of a big bubble that's going through there. So we've utilized the developer fees to help us along with, you know, a lot of our Measure D funds with projects there. So it's been, you know, multi-funded in different ways along with our CT grants that we've been able to receive thanks to Liz's help and Kelly Lee in our budget office, to be quite honest with you. So I present it tonight and can answer any questions that you might have regarding.
So, Mr. Pinkerton, with regard to these developer fees, if there is a year where we are not experiencing growth, do those fees remain in the pot, or is it use them or lose them?
No, it stays. So it stays in the fund. You have a certain number of years that you're supposed to expend the funds.
Right.
And for us, since we do have these projects, especially at San Luis Obispo High School right now, it's a great way for us to utilize those developer fees.
Okay. I just wanted to let everyone know that we don't lose those if we don't have an opportunity to use them due to growth. Any other questions or comments, Mr. Buckman?
Yes, thanks. I think there'll be just four quick ones.
Okay.
So are we collecting at this developer fees? We can collect either maximum amount or less. And are we collecting the maximum amount allowed by law at this point?
So at this point, we currently are. I think it was last year. So every 2 years, the state of California comes out with the new developer fees. I believe we are currently, you know, at that max level.
Okay. And this dawned on me when I was reading this. I'm sorry I didn't ask it earlier yeah. when we were doing it, but different buildings cost different, you know, to construct cost differently around the state. We know that from our Measure D increases. Yeah. So are communities or school districts allowed to have a developer fee that represents, like, the cost of living in its community, or is it a state set?
Yeah, it's a state set fund. It's a state set amount per square footage. Okay. So it's not based on if it's a, you know, if it's a 1,500 square foot house that costs $10 million or 1,500 square foot house that costs $1 million. It's all the same.
Right? I'm just wondering
it's square footage cost.
Whether there's a difference in, say, San Jose, where it's like $1 million a square foot to build a house.
No.
So
it's the same. It's a state level.
Kind of just being facetious because yeah. I mean, really yeah. think we should get more. And then in the report, it says something about we annually do a demographics count of the students, and sometimes we approve and ask for other demographic studies. So is there.
So normally, if the board is going to actually. You know, adopt a new, like the new rate that may come up next year, the new developer fee rate. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to do a justification study. So you go out, they look at all the development in the future. Is there going to be housing? Is there going to be kids associated with that housing? Is there potential for the district to increase? So that would be the justification study. Now we have our student data that we have an annual program that we use, and that that's something that, you know, in particular is going to be really interesting as we look at Baywood, we look at potential transfers, but it basically has a map that breaks down where every student goes. And so I can look at that and kind of, you know, if we ever wanted to had or needed to change boundaries or do things like that, it's a great program for us to use.
And then there's another kind of demographic study we do sometimes, such as when we did voting by district or at large. And so
yeah.
we go out, so it... There are different kinds of demographic studies.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Can I make a motion?
All right. Then this is a resolution that we're asking to be adopted this evening.
So I'll make a motion to approve resolution 091920, developer fee report and 5-year findings.
I'll second. We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by me. Any further discussion? All right, Ms. Dawson, you're on.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Frain?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Ms. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
All right, staying in resolution land, 9.04 has to do with our first interim report.
Yes, so we're going to kick it off with Julie Lang. She's going to come up and talk about her first interim.
Okay, great. Thanks, Julie.
All right. So tonight we are presenting our first interim report, which includes all the changes to our budget since budget adoption. It's really sort of the busiest time. I pulled a budget transfer report just to see what had happened. It was 84 pages long, so it's been a busy quarter. Most of the changes occur because of salary and benefit changes and putting carryover into the budget. We also budget as needs arise. This is a positive certification, which means we can meet our financial obligations in the current year and two subsequent years. So we'll just kind of go through a quick summary version, maybe, of... Oops. There we go. Of what's occurred. So at budget adoption and first interim, our beginning balance was about $16.5 million. Our revenues at first interim actually went down a bit because of a couple of main factors, one being that the STRS on behalf was over budgeted, so it actually reduced revenue and it also reduced expenditures. It doesn't look like expenditures were reduced because they weren't, but there were a number of increases to the expense side of things, one of those being just budgeting the carryover amounts, which amounted to about $1.2 million. The 2% raise that we negotiated was not included in the adopted budget, so that is in first interim, and that was a little over $2 million. And then we also had some needs that arose. We had a furniture budget at about $200,000. Vehicle replacement was about $140,000. We prepaid an IS&T contract, three-year contract this year, $264,000, but that means we won't have to pay it the next 2 years, and we didn't have to pay financing charges on it that way. And we bought some equipment, and we have our billing accounts, which once we received the money, we also budgeted an expense. That was about $500,000 just through first interim. So some of the reasons for the changes, some of the highlights here, were that our property taxes increased about 2.78 over last year's property taxes. However, that was less than we projected. We projected a 3.5% increase. It turned out to be about $500,000 less in our revenue. The unitary taxes, I think you know, dropped because PG&E, the valuation was reassessed, and they retired some assets, and I think Ryan's going to go over that a little bit more when he talks about the 10-year budget. We did receive our SB 1090 revenue, yay, so that's in there. The general fund carryover was budgeted at about $1.2 million. We had donations and billing accounts at almost $500,000 for the first interim. We budget special ed revenues based on what the County Office of Ed projects for us, and with the current estimates, we're at about $11.2 million of district contribution to special ed. However, after we posted first interim, we received another $828,000 that is actually unrestricted money for special ed preschool intervention. And it's unrestricted, so it'll basically just offset some of these contributions that we make to special ed. And then, as I said, the 2% increases to salaries have been budgeted. Our revenue sources, usually our property taxes are at about 78%. They're at 75% now just because we got that additional SB 1090 money, which increased the local piece of the pie. The other LCFF revenues include our Education Protection Act money, which is about $1.4 million. We do that transfer to adult ed program to keep that going. We have to pay the charter school their LCFF money, and then special ed property tax is also included in that. On the expenditure side, I apologize. I think at second interim we included the administrative salaries in there separately, which I didn't do here, but I did take a look at them, and our administrative salaries, if they were included in this pie, would be about 5%. And that would reduce the certificated salary amount to about 36% and our classified salary amount to 17%. Our employee benefits continue to increase. They're about 21% of the budget. That does not include the STRS on behalf. And everything else is about where it normally is in our budget. As you know, our benefits continue to increase. So even with the governor paying down some of the STRS liability, our benefits this year were still higher than they were last year, but not higher. They were less than they projected originally. So our STRS amount this year is 7.1. It's supposed to go up to about 18.4 next year, and then the year after that should be about 18.1, and that should continue, as far as we know right now, at about 18.1%. PERS went up to 19.72% this year. It's supposed to go up to 22.7 next year and 24.6 the year after that and continue going up into the future with no end in sight. And we are projecting our health and welfare benefits to continue increasing at a rate of about 5%. So all of our benefits continue to go up. This is just to show you that where we are as far as being a basic aid district. It's still looking like the LCFF increases with their COLA amounts of, I think they're projected at 3% next year and 2.8% the year after that, and our property taxes are going up at about the same rate, so we're going to continue staying in basic aid. So for this year, we're at about $8.6 million. Next year, we're projecting at about $9.6 million, and then over $10 million in the third year. And I will turn it over to Brian to talk about the 10-year budget. Do you want it up here on this?
Yes, yeah. If you pull it up, Mandy, you can see, you can't see it, but we'll, you can blow it up to 18-19 if you can. So a couple of key things for the board to understand that Julie just reviewed with you. So let's start with PG&E, unitary tax. So we were early on when PG&E told us they were closing the plant, moving forward, they gave us this chart that showed the slow decline of unitary tax over the 7-year period, basically, which is why we received the mitigation funds. They're supposed to help us through that time period, right, so that we can maintain our budget and get through as those assets depreciated. Over the past 2 years, as the plant is depreciated, our actual property taxes have been high enough that we didn't really feel the impact of depreciation. This year, however, was a substantial year for PG&E, as all of you know. So not only did PG&E do a huge depreciation of plant assets in the area, but their stock value also dropped dramatically from over $20 a share to, I believe, $7 a share during that time period. And so our unitary tax is based on the value of PG&E in our area. So where it was $28 million that came to the county of San Luis Obispo, that dropped to $22 million in a year. So a dramatic effect for everybody, but because we received 35% of those revenues, it dropped us $2 million. So in our 10-year budget, we've done a conservative projection of 3.5% for 10 years, out years. The last 2 years, we've come in at this same time, the first interim, and we've raised those amounts to roughly 5% over the past 2 years. So this is the first year, because of those huge declines in the value of unitary tax, that we've actually seen lower, a 2.78 increase overall. So even though our secured, unsecured was over 5%, because of the drop in unitary tax, it brought our overall tax increases over 18-19 to the 2.78%. In speaking with the assessor's office, with them speaking to the state, people in the state, they don't believe that this dramatic of a decline is going to happen again next year. That said, for me, digging into it, so currently now we receive about $8 million in unitary tax through PG&E. So, again, was 10, was 8. I think long-term, no matter what happens at Diablo Canyon, we're probably going to get about $2 to $3 million in unitary tax. So that potential decline over the next 5 years could be as much as $5 million for us. So I'm going to be working with Julie to kind of look at our overall property increases and try to build that in to our projection. But I still feel like 3.5% is still a conservative projection in terms of ongoing at this point. Just based on everything in terms of the economy right now, the UCLA forecast, the amount of building that's happening in our area, all of these things are attributing to a positive positive movement in terms of the future that we should be able to maintain about a 3.5. Now, if something happens next year again, I'll be we'll look at our projections each year and decide how we want to move. As Julie said, also that's not included in this was the special ed funding that we received. So roughly $830,000 will be added to our budget, right? So that's an addition of revenues that's currently not in this first interim. So that helps the bottom line. I also think that from everything I'm hearing at the CBO conference recently, you probably heard at CSBA, economy's good, state revenues are up. It looks like the governor is focused on potentially helping with the STRS purse, again, another potential buy down, as well as continuing the special ed funding. And there might even be more funds to do more than that. So we're going to find that out in January. right, when the governor releases his budget and kind of where he's headed into the future. But I, again, all indications are that we should, again, benefit like we did this year to some of those funds. We've known over the past couple of years, right, that we've had a couple of good years of surplus. Knowing that with the depreciation, with everything, we also got this big influx of SB 1090 funds this year, kind of a double payment. And then next year, that drops down over the next 2 years. So you'll see kind of 2 years of surplus, last year, this year, 2 years of decline, and then we kind of, again, get back to where we need to be. In all of this, though, the critical point for us is really to keep our focus on personnel costs. So that is what we've maintained, right, that shooting for the 85%, making sure that we're there, is, I think, important as we move forward. And so that will be something we'll have to monitor as we go. We did add a lot of personnel this year. So our Title I sites, in terms of teachers, we had a special education class. So we did a lot of things in terms of class size, and we lost 47 students. So we'll, again, be looking at that. That's all going to be part of the LCAP process and, how we utilize our resources that we'll be sharing with the board and talking about, how we want to move forward. So as of right now, again, for me, it's kind of, it was a hit because I was hoping that we were going to have extra funds to do more maintenance projects, do things like that. So I've had to kind of scale back on some of those items right now. But again, we're still, even at this point, still at 84% in terms of personnel costs. So it'll be something, again, that we have to watch, continue to measure over the next few years. So you can see kind of the bottom line, 10-year budget. Again, that's with that projection. We got rid of the unitary tax line that we had in previous 10-year budgets because that was just based on kind of what PG&E had put down, and Julie had kind of just done a measured approach to what that decline would look like. But it really wasn't real in terms of what the real value of unitary tax was to the school district. So that's something we're going to, again, like I said, kind of focus a little bit more on now that I got that information from the assessor's office about, what our current, unitary tax is tied directly to PG&E, what that is, and what that could look like in the future.
Right. Mr. Buckman.
Thanks, Ryan. I want to thank Julie and Ryan for taking some time to sit with me today, and I really appreciate your putting that, speaking about the amount of money that we set aside for administration and how small it is. It's my opinion that there's still this myth out in the public that public education somehow has a bloated amount of administrators, and I think it's critical that we include that small piece of the pie. So I really appreciate that. This is the first year that we've had that agreement, I think, with Cayucas and Coast and us. And I noticed the second year, but
second.
But I noticed the dollar amount this year. I think it was like maybe close to $70,000. That, how are we doing with that?
Yeah, so it actually has worked out really well. So last year was our first year. And so basically it's an arrangement we've worked out where students that transfer either to Morro Bay High School, to Los Dos Middle School, vice versa, between our school district and theirs, we pay them as well if some of our kids, again, 6 through 12 is what it applies to. The first year, we kind of were stepping into it. So the first year, I believe, was about 25% in terms of what they paid. This year, it jumps up to 50, and then it moves up to the actual full amount, I believe, over the next year, or possibly two. So you're going to see that amount increase over the next 2 years.
Then within here, and I think I have the page number, but there's a line that refers to tuition, and I was kind of interested in that because I'm not sure we charged tuition. Can you explain that? It's about $200,000.
So we do have foreign exchange students outside the United States. So we're one of the schools, I think, in the nation that actually has this agreement where we have our foreign exchange students who actually pay tuition to come to us. And so we try to balance that. Huge kudos to Val Harrigan, who kind of oversees all of that program and the kids as well as the transfers with Cayucas, Cambrian Coast. So Val does a magnificent job of keeping that documentation, and that's what we use in order to determine, funds and who's paying who between the school districts. Okay.
And last one, this was just, I was looking at something and I just had this wild idea. I know that we sometimes buy big pieces of equipment. I think one of the ones I remembered was a camera that can look through the sewers, and I know we discovered all the roots that were over and we took the tree down. But I know that at about the same year, the county bought one of those machines and the city bought one of those machines, and I don't know if there's a chance that we can ever come up with some kind of agreement to share equipment, but it just was, yeah. It just was a crazy idea. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Any other questions or discussion? This is an action item to approve the first interim report. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, if I can get back and get the, oops, this is not a touch screen. I'd be happy to approve this. So I'd like to move that we approve Resolution 11-1920, the first interim report.
Second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Unger. This is a roll call vote.
Mr. Buckman? Ms. Frame? Mr. Millar? Ms. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, next, we've got a lot of numbers tonight. It's our audit reports.
So you may recall that our audit firm, Vavrinic Trinan Day, that we've used over the years, has changed now to Ide Bailey. So Jonathan, who you probably recognize from prior years, is here with Ide Bailey to go over our audits. We include all three audits in there now. We feel like it's a good idea for you to be able to see everything that is audited. And I think we got a clean audit in every regards. There are a couple of observations, and both the schools that had observations have already responded and corrected those things. So with that, I will turn it over to Jonathan.
Thank you, Julie. Good evening, President Sheffer, Governing Board, Superintendent Prater, Cabinet, members of Cabinet. It's great to be here. Always excited to come up to San Luis Obispo. With that, since we have three exciting reports, I will start with the district, since it's the largest. So as you can see, the big change this year is our logo. There's in the audit report, no new GASBs, nothing major. Next year, there's stuff we'll talk about. We'll bring light to that, but nothing in the 2019 audit report. So as you know, our audit process includes two phases, or what we call two phases, interim and final. We're testing the internal controls, state compliance, and the first phase. And then the second phase is wrapping up any compliance, whether it's state and federal, and also testing our year-end balances. So that with that, it allows us to provide this deliverable to you today. So I would like you to turn, if you do have either a PDF copy or a hard copy, to page 100. Great. And while you're getting there, I would also like to thank Julie and her staff, and Ryan as well, for everything they help us with. We wouldn't be able to compile this report without their assistance. So we do appreciate everything they do for us. Great. There it is. So the summary of auditor's results. It's the best place to turn if you want to see how the report reads or how the report or the audit went. So we opine on three separate areas, as I mentioned. So financial statements, which includes internal controls and provides the numbers, and then federal compliance or federal awards, and if you scroll a little further down, state compliance, so state awards. So that's, California requires us to test or audit certain state compliance areas. So as you can also see, for each of the areas we opine on, we issued unmodified opinions, as Julie mentioned, which is the best opinion we can give. And as of June 30th, it means the numbers and figures are fiscally accurate. And also state, federal, and compliance is probably a good way to say that. So we for the federal, we tested, just so you know, child nutrition cluster as the child nutrition program as a whole for federal compliance. And that concludes with, because I believe Julie mentioned the comments, if you continue on to the next few pages, have already been addressed, but there were a couple comments that we had after the close of the year, and because we noticed it, and unfortunately the timing, we include it in the report because it's a June 30th deadline on those. So they've already been addressed, which is great, and we always enjoy seeing that. So with that, are there any questions on the district report?
Seeing none. So at one, two, three, four. Okay, so we need to approve this report this evening. So is there any discussion or questions this time? Then we need a motion to approve the 2018-19 audit reports. Mr. Millar, jump right in there.
Are we approving all three audits?
Well, do you?
I can present on the others as well, and then we can
do them.
Sure.
Do all at a time? Okay.
Great. So with that, we have the Measure D report. So if you briefly read through it or happen to read through it, it's very short, so it's a fun read. With that, there's actually two reports within this report. There's a financial report, which as of June 30th, it focuses on the building fund, which is Fund 21. And if you tie it back to the school district report, you'd see that same separate opinion unit that we opine on for building as well. It's essentially the same financials as in the district, but it's isolated to just the building fund. So the first report is financial, so we test internal controls, as well as the performance audit. So with the performance audit, it's more of compliance, so making sure that the bond expenditures are spent in accordance with the ballot and the measure and what the voters wanted the funds to be spent on. So we did issue unmodified opinion on the financial report, and if you turn to the second report, page 3, I would like to highlight something in the performance audit. So there we go. Great. So keep going. Oh, I think that's the end of the first one. If you keep going, there's two. There's the financial report and the performance report. There we go. Keep going. Keep going. We're getting there. And then it starts over with page numbers. There we go. Great. So page 3. And on page 3, if you look at the procedures we performed, it goes to tell you the areas we sampled a selection. We had a sample selection of expenditures within a certain time period, which is June 3rd or at fiscal year 2018-19. And step 2, we tested 44 transactions, and it was about just over $9 million. It was about 32% of the overall expenditures, which were $28 million. So, and with that, we issued a clean report as well. There were no adjustments or comments as it related to the performance audit. And that... Let's continue on to the financing authority.
Let me just ask if there were any questions audit report
for the bond.
We just took a look at.
For Measure
D. With regard to Measure D. Anything? Okay. Thank you.
Great. So on to the CCSFA, as we refer to it, or Central California Schools Financing Authority. And again, it goes through the financials, similar format to the district report. But if you would turn to page 30, I would like to point out my favorite page again. And thank you for whoever is handling the technical. Really appreciate it. Great. So, as you can see, we opine on the financial statements alone for just the financing authority, and we issued an unmodified opinion. There were no adjustments, and that was it. So, there were no findings. And with that, are there any questions?
All right. Mr. Millar, would you like to make a motion with regard to all three of those reports?
Thank you. Briefly, I just want to congratulate the Central California Schools Financing Authority team.
For our clean audit. Couldn't have done it without you.
I would move all the three audit reports for San Luis Coastal Unified School District, CCSFA, and the Measure D audit.
I'll second that. And I would just like to comment that I'm pleased to see that we continue to have a strong run on good audits. And I think this should be comforting to the community, too, to know that we are spending our Measure D money in a way that we promised that we would be. And I know there are some places that that just doesn't happen, and I'm really glad that we're doing what we said we'd be doing.
All right. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Thanks. All right, next we have a discussion item, 10.02, four-year plans and college readiness. Ms. Frost.
Thank you very much. Diane Frost, Student Support Services. I'm here tonight to speak with you about college and career readiness, highlighting four-year planning, and a new addition to our eighth grade transition activities. So let me see if I can do this. Down. Thank you. All right. I do want to acknowledge that we already have very impressive transition activities planned for our eighth graders going on to high school, and they're listed up here on the PowerPoint. San Luis High School eighth grade assembly at LAMS, Tiger Fest, where the kids come over to the high school and look at elective programs, English class presentations by our counselors, eighth graders visit for a day in May, and then we have parent opportunities as well. If you look at Morro Bay High School, they're very similar, and this year are adding a couple of things. Eighth graders will visit in May, and they haven't done that in a number of years, and they're also going to have an eighth grade assembly at LOMS conducted by the counselors. So while we really do have impressive transition activities, we still see some issues that we would like to address, and I think it all falls under this equity umbrella. As a district, we've really been digging deep on equity issues across programming. And when we look at our eighth graders moving on to high school, we see some issues here. If you look at the achievement gap data, you'll see that SED, EL, and students with disabilities are struggling in a couple of areas. You've seen this data before because Mr. Mayfield shared it with me. If you look at the, excuse me, I got ahead of myself. If you look at the A through G completion rates for both of our high schools, at San Luis Obispo High School, we have a 41% gap between SED students and non-SED students. At Morro Bay High School, again, talking about A through G completion rates, we have a 35% gap between those children who graduate with A through G completion and those who don't, SED versus non-SED. And then if you look at AP class placement, at San Luis Obispo High, you have a 24% gap. Looking at our SED versus non-SED, and then looking at Morro Bay High School, we have an 18% gap. So the question was, how do we start at the middle school and affect change with our students? What we've decided is one-to-one meetings in eighth grade with our high school administrators and counselors, literally at the schools meeting with the students. We see about 20 to 30 minute meetings. We see our at-risk kids first. So the high school administrators, the high school counselors will come down and they will meet one-on-one with the students. We have a couple of priorities, which you can see on these slides here. Our first priority is that we'll talk about four-year plans, and those plans will be sent to the children ahead of time so they can try to fill them out with their parents. Some of them will, some of them will not. Everybody will have that one-to-one meeting. We want to talk about what classes they should be taking. What is college prep? What is an AP class? What does A through G completion mean? We're going to talk about CTE pathways. We're going to talk about grades in your freshman year. There's this fallacy that those freshman year grades don't count. We want them to know before they step on that campus that those grades do count. We don't think it's too early to talk about scholarships and FAFSA, telling the kids that this is a reasonable goal for everybody. And then that last item I have there, one of the benefits we'll have is now every one of our eighth graders will have met one-on-one with a counselor or an administrator. They will know somebody at high school that first day that they walk on campus. We also have other priorities if we get to them in the meetings. How do you feel about your plan? What classes are you excited about? What are you concerned with? What are you going to be involved with? Let's talk a little bit about our sports. Let's talk a little bit about our clubs. So there's a lot of possibilities in these meetings. I will say, and you're going to hear from Jennifer Donnelly in a couple of minutes, Los Osos Middle School kind of piloted this a little bit for us. While they did not have the high school administrators and counselors come down, last year they did meet with their students one-on-one, and they went through all of those questions in the first priority column. For Los Osos Middle School, they'll probably be concentrating on the second priority, while Slo High will be starting with the first priority. I do want to acknowledge our counselors at the high school level have really, really improved their transition game. This year, they have four-year plans available online at each of their websites. Those are fillable plans. We are going to be sending them out to every eighth grader in Parent Square with directions 2 weeks ahead of these one-to-one meetings. They may bring them in completed. They may not. Either way, our counselors and administrators are going to work with these kids, walk them through it, and really give them the idea of the importance of everything that they do at high school, the decisions they make in eighth grade. Like I said, we're looking at eighth grade as that starting point for successful completion at the high school level. We think that Los Osos Middle School is really kind of modeling the direction that we want to go district-wide, and I wanted Mrs. Donnelly to share with you some of the things that they've implemented over the last year and a half.
All right. Good evening. So thanks, Diane. I just wanted to share a little bit about the planning process that we undertook last year at Los Osos Middle School. And in thinking about it, I wanted to start with kind of the reason it matters. And, you know, we kicked off last school year with Trudy, and she spoke to us about opening doors. And she talked to us about not just opening doors, right, but grabbing kids by the hand and walking them through those doors. And I think, you know, we know as the adults in the room that the doors that kids walk through in ninth grade can impact the doors that they have available to walk through in 10th, 11th, 12th grade and thereafter. And so at the middle level, when we know that, we have an obligation then to inform our kids about our system, how our system works, like what doors are available to you and how do you access them. And also we have an obligation to look at our kids, like look in the white of their eyes and tell them the possibilities we see for them that they may not yet see for themselves and help them access those. And so I think the reason we really see this as big equity work is we know when we do this well for our most disadvantaged students that we're giving them the type of mentoring and guidance that our most advantaged kids are getting in their home with their families.
And so that's kind of, I think, the background of why this work really matters to us. Other direction. So last year, what we did at Los Osos Middle School is our myself, Mr. Bloom, and Ms. Baca, our counselor, we were able to meet with each of our eighth graders, and we sat down and we had these one-on-one conversations to help them develop a plan for high school. And really, for us, it was about opening doors for kids, really creating that understanding, beginning understanding for our most disadvantaged kids of crafting the path that they want for their future. And just a couple of the pieces that were how we do that at the middle school. Sorry, kind of just backing up. We had these one-year planning meetings, but we also had advisory class content that we've helped build out for our kids. So we want this to really be more than one event of this meeting, but to be woven through what kids experience in the middle level. And so all of our kids in San Luis Coastal have some great lessons they do with our school counselors in middle school. About learning about their own interests, who they are. They log into California colleges. They research various colleges. At Los Osos this year, we've also built out additional advisory content that's in three areas. It's learning about myself, learning about careers, and learning about college. So we've built out advisory content for teachers around, like, what kind of student am I? How do I learn best? How do I develop strong study habits, right? So kind of just learning all about themselves. Also doing some research around careers and trying to connect then their interests to careers that are out there. And then same thing with college. College has so much vocabulary around it. And is really just a whole nother system for kids to learn, talking about the college experience, funding for college, what are college majors. So it's an exciting journey that we're on. We also, I don't know, Mandy, can you maybe click for me on that link at the bottom? I just wanted to preview for you another piece of this. This is a website that we're building out to help support this work, both at the middle school and high school. And it's in essence, how this got started is we looked at the course catalog for our high schools and we said, let's modernize it. Let's like rewrite this content. Let's have kids rewrite it for kids and let's make it accessible. And so that's what this is. It's still a work in progress, but you can see that you can browse by subject or grade level. So if you don't mind like clicking on ninth grade, for example, and then students can see in there, if you scroll down, all of the courses that are available in ninth grade. If you want to just select theater up at the top, it shows, you know, that class is available in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, and then there's a description there that the students have written. So we're still building this out. Some of these are still stock photos, but there'll be more Obey High photos of kids as we move on. So really taking that information and making it accessible to kids, growing that idea of the planning meeting well beyond that time they sit with us. And we've talked a bit about the planning meeting already, but a lot of people have said to me, like, what exactly is it that you're doing when you sit and plan with kids? Like, what are you guys coming up with? So just to demystify that a little bit, these are the questions we start with asking. Have you thought about high school? Do you know about high school? And I'll tell you, it's an awesome experience because I had kids, eighth graders, walk in last year and look at me and say, yep, I know about high school. I know I want to take health this summer because I want to open up a year for an elective next year. And I know what elective I want to take. And these are the teachers I want. And these are the sports I'm going to play. Like, kids walk in and just have that path laid out. They know it from their parents, from their older siblings. I have other kids walk in, and when I look at them and say, have you thought about high school yet? They say, no. And I say, you know, well, what do you know about high school? Do you know anything about Morro Bay High? Not much yet. Are you going to Morro Bay High? I think so.
right? And so that's that gap you see. You see this tremendous gap. And so our work at the middle level is really to improve, shrink that, right? We want to improve the experience our kids have on a regular basis in our school so that they are more informed about the choices that lie ahead. And we want to partner with them to have those conversations. So we're excited for the journey that we're on. And there's a video, I think, on the next slide. This is some. These are some of our eighth graders who have not yet had their planning meetings, and they're just telling you they're excited about them. But I'd love to share back a video with you once we've done them this year so you can hear what the kids are saying.
Because it's a friendly environment. I'm really excited about high school, but I don't know what's coming because I don't have any older siblings.
I've heard friends tell me things about high school, but I still don't know what's ahead.
In our advisor and humanities class, we have been doing college and career plans with our school counselor.
I'm aware of the four-year plan that we'll be doing in eighth grade, and I'm really excited to see all of the classes we can take.
I'm aware of the four-year plan because my cousin goes to high school. I'm excited to see what courses there are available.
I'm really excited because this is an opportunity to talk about high school with our parents, and we'll be able to pick our classes together with our parents.
I'm glad to work one-on-one with our principals and counselor about our four-year plan.
I think it is neat how we can work personally with the school counselor and principal.
So just like a cute little promo, right? Because the kids just know the planning is coming, and we just ask them kind of, what do you think about it? And I think the piece you heard the kids say there is, right, they're in eighth grade, and it's certainly not too early for them. They're like, we don't know what lies ahead. We want to know what lies ahead. Ninth grade is the first time kids are really designing and picking classes for their schedule, and it's critical that we're partnering with them and doing that in an informed way. So I'd love to share back with you after we've done some plans this year and let you hear what that experience has been like for our kiddos. And that's all. Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Frame.
Ms. Donnelly, I just wanted to thank you very much for this hard work. I mean, you seem very passionate, excited about it. And I was thinking as you were talking about it, you know, looking at the data, that this one-on-one allows for an authentic and opportunity for the differentiation that is needed for different kids subgroups, and it really builds kind of an authentic relationship. So I really kind of see this kind of as a model in building for meeting kids wherever they're at, which is really kind of what we're trying to do. And secondly, I just was curious, have you had an opportunity to talk with, you know, students who, like the eighth graders who are now ninth graders, and you know, touch bases? I know you're really busy, so.
No, we need to do that. Oh. We've heard we need to wrap around to kids. So this year we certainly will, as we meet with kids, make sure we're gathering that information. What we're excited about for this year is, as Ms. Frost shared, the high school will also be doing one-on-one meetings with our kids. So our kids at Loams will get the first meeting with us this year where they develop their plan, and then they'll have that second meeting with the high school admin or counselor where they can dig deeper and ask those more, like, what are you concerned about, and those type of questions. So the piece of that, which I didn't speak to, that we're also really excited about is being able to give the high school better information so they can more intelligently design their master schedule based on what our kids need in terms of classes. So that second meeting will help with that as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Buckman, then Ms. Drunker.
So I did want to mention that a very similar presentation was done at the parent leaders last month, and I was very impressed with the reception that it got, and the parents seemed to be very excited about it. So it's good that the board's getting it, but I also got to see the parent reaction, and it was good. So thank you.
Ms.
stronger.
I have a couple of questions for you. So one of the interesting things that we heard tonight was from the student from Pacific Beach who said, I know I don't want to go to college. I knew it. It's not interesting to me. I don't really care for school. I'm going straight in the Army. And kudos to that guy for knowing exactly what he wants. So first question is, how do we support those kids that are just saying, I don't think I want to go to college? So how do we weave the focus in on college, which is pretty much what we've been talking about, with students who maybe need to be aware of it, but all along their pathway they're thinking, I want to do something different. I want an alternative. I want a career of some sort or another.
It's a great question, and I'll tell you, when you're sitting with kids, kids with all different pathways in front of them, there are kids that have an idea of what they want to do next, and there are kids that have no idea, and everything in between. And so our conversation is really around, like, who are you as a person? What are you interested in? What are your talents? What are the careers that are out there? And what are the pathways the high school has to support those careers? And then what are the college programs and what do those look like? So I think really, you know, Chris, the answer to that is it's supporting wherever a student wants to go. But a lot of our kids at the middle level, especially our most disadvantaged kids, they're not sure where they want to go. And it's like any place you go is great, but let's have a conversation where you can explore who you are and what things you like and then what's out there in the world that you can access, you know. So we want to support all, you know, college, career, military, and we talk through those. Those are in the four-year planning document as well, all those options.
And then at what point do we start really encouraging students to fill out the FAFSA, and how do we help students fill out the FAFSA? Because I know it can be daunting.
Yeah, that's a big piece, and I think for us, that's a piece that the Morro Bay High in their second meeting will be tackling with kids.
Okay.
Our initial conversation is really more like focusing kids around who they are, right, and then what's out there.
They're middle school students.
Mm-hmm. But we do touch in on the funding piece, and it's more about, like, there are many funding options out there in support, and we don't want that to be a barrier, and we'll talk about that more in our next conversation.
Okay. And then I'm excited to hear that we're having the high school counselors meet with the eighth graders. What's that doing to the workload of the high school counselors? And is it increased their workload to a point that we need to be thinking about more support? And maybe that's kind of an unfair question for you guys since you're not developing the budget.
Yeah.
But I know they're probably working really hard with the students they have. And now we're asking them to go to the middle school and work with students clearly who they're going to have. But I'm curious about that.
Our counselors have always gone to the middle school. They meet with the English classes. Sometimes that takes a day. Sometimes it takes a couple of days. What we're really asking them to do is reevaluate how they're spending time at the middle school. This will take more time, though. There's no doubt about it. It's 3 days minimum per administrator and counselor, but I think the other part of the question is, what value do we gain? So if we do these one-on-one meetings and if the kids have a clear pathway, is that going to reduce the class changes in the fall? Is that going to reduce the parent phone calls in the fall? Is that going to reduce the confusion as we're moving in and going through the next year? So yes, it is more of a commitment, but I think the payoff is in the end. And honestly, the payoff is in a number of different things, the one-on-one meetings, the connection you make, all of that kind of thing. But it will be a little bit more time away from their campus.
And then the last question I have is this the kind of thing that you would put in your single plan and also in the LCAP?
Absolutely could put that in there, 100%.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
I just wanted to say that I think that especially in light of our Measure D changes to the high schools, that the offerings were able to give them more hands-on with Morro Bay High School, with the green room and the, you know, all the audiovisual things going on and the auto. And I know some of the improvements we're making at San Luis Obispo High School will also reflect additional paths. And I'll be interested to see how, you know, kind of have some results, see how this works. Mm-hmm. I just heard an article on NPR either this morning or yesterday about how college enrollment is really declining, has been declining the last couple years. And partly it's because the, you know, employment already is so high that people have jobs. You know, it's one of those typical things where when the economy is poor, actually college enrollment goes up because people are feeling the need to really have more options. And when the economy is a little better, that enrollment goes down a little bit. So, but I still believe it's very important, and all the economic and quality of life issues still remain. That having a college education or career training provide to somebody. So I'll be curious to see if there's a culture developing out there around some of that. But I think that these opportunities to work with kids, especially those whose families are already super busy, may not have in their own minds at the forefront that they need to start thinking about this at this time. I think, you know, there are people who think, oh, this is a conversation we'll have when he or she is a junior in high school, and understanding the great importance of beginning to just have the thought process, not get stuck into a little cubbyhole of this is what you're going to do, or you're good at math, so, you know, I see you becoming some math professor somewhere, but, you know, that these are, let's look at where your talents are and whether there are things you'd like to explore in different ways. So I think it's great to have these conversations a little earlier rather than later. And over time, we will be kind of training the adults, the parents, that we do need to start having these conversations sooner than perhaps when they went to college or were exploring some of these things. So I'll be curious to have some follow-up feedback on how it works out with the students, with the counselors, with their workload, and with the families as well. So thank you.
Good, thank you.
Anything
very
else
much.
From the board? Okay. Next is 10.03, CTE update and approval of the advisory committee. I've seen Liz Moore hanging around here, so you're on. It's your time. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Liz Moore, and there are some fantastic things going on with your career technical education programs. I'm going to tell you about a couple of them. This month is a busy month for grants. We're in about the fourth year of our CTIG grant. We just put in one for the following year. We will be doing some reporting. We have our Perkins funding that we're looking forward to that takes care of some equipment, some licensing, some professional development. And the one I want to focus on is the K-12 Strong Workforce. We received that this past year, actually just in December. We were part of a consortium with the county. And coincidentally, we're just doing a whole nother grant this month, and we're allowed three applications, and it will be starting July. The first application we're going to do with the county again. We do a regional consortium, and all of our CTE programs get together and come up with common goals. Another application is for the Ag Consortium. They're a pretty strong group in the state, and they get together and put in an application. And an exciting one, I think, is the one that we're doing just for our district. We're partnering with the Slo Chamber and the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation to facilitate industry engagement and relationships. We're using data from the survey that they've already done to make our points to prove that what we could do with this goal and with the activities. So it's pretty exciting. One of the things that we've been focusing on that I wanted to tell you about are certifications. So this grant money helps with paying for students to get certified, and you can see there's quite a few certifications that they can get. I wanted to focus on the lifeguard training. We have a pretty new public service pathway that Megan Whiteson does at Morro Bay High School. And Karen Sweeney, who works for the Morro Bay Parks and Rec, runs the pool. Coincidentally, has been on our advisory committee for CTE for many years. And she said, hey, can we train the kids during class to be lifeguards? And so we're working that out, that they can come in the capstone class for Megan Whiteson's public service pathway and get trained and then work at the pool. That can be their internship. That can be their paid job. It's working out pretty well. Then I want to tell you that the Just One Job Fair in our fourth year will be coming up in March. So we'll be looking forward to that. And that's an interviewing day for the students, an event that we bring businesses in to interview the students. And sometimes the businesses might just offer the interview experience, but they might have a paid job. They might have a job shadow for the students, internship. And it's a great way to bring the business in and have the students get kind of a real-life test with their career-ready skills. And those are just the highlights that I'm talking to you about tonight. And the last thing I need is I'm seeking your approval of the CTE Advisory Committee members as listed in the board agenda. We met in August, and they participate in many ways in our school with the Just One and guest speaking and hiring our students and so forth. Any questions?
Hi. Any questions or discussion from the board? All right. So at this time, you are seeking approval of the advisory committee.
The CTE advisory committee.
Yeah, the CTE advisory committee. Mr. Buckman.
Yes, I'll move approval of the CTE advisory committee.
Thank you.
Right. I'll second. We have Mr. Under, did you have
I just want to say it's great to see so many community members, people who I know that have been deeply involved in their community supporting us through this effort. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And several years ago, I worked with Jack Mitchell on some Perkins grant things, and it was really interesting. It was a great way. It was way before I was on school board, but it was a great opportunity to kind of dive in and learn some of these things. So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by me. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Liz, very much. All right, Mr. Mayfield.
Yes,
California
good evening.
California School Dashboard.
California School Dashboard. A couple of months ago, I presented the local indicators on the California School Dashboard, and tonight this is all the indicators are now released. Last week, the state officially released the dashboard, which has state indicators, which are based on standardized test results and other data that the state collects. Are you scrolling, Mandy? Yeah, so as you say there, it's an online tool that shows how districts are performing. It's a growth tool, so it's not necessarily, certainly not the gauges are intended to compare school to school or district to district, but it's rather for growth, showing strengths and areas of weakness and areas to improve. Okay. As I mentioned, local indicators are tools that we go through and rate ourselves as either met or not met. We did that previously and met all areas, and that's on the state website. You can look up that information. And then the state indicators, which I'll go over tonight, are the ones that are the data that is collected by the state. It's based on a 5x5 model, which is up here as a graphic, and it's change over time. Basically, you have a level on the left-hand side from very high down to very low, and then you have change over time from significantly changed to or significantly increased to significantly decreased. And then there's different settings on the gauges according to the change and the level, red, orange, yellow, green, and blue. Okay, so the state indicators are in these six areas up here: academic performance in English, language, arts, and math, English learner progress, and we still don't have a gauge color for English learner progress. They're telling us that we need one more year of data before that will be available. So there is raw data available, but no gauge available for that. College and career readiness, chronic absenteeism, graduation rate, and then suspension rate. Okay, so looking at our academic performance indicators in English language arts, we're now rated in the blue level. That's an increase from last year, which was in green. Overall, as a district, we increased by 8.4 points in English language arts, and we're 45 or almost 46 points above standard. In mathematics, we've maintained the green level, same as last year, though we did increase by 7.6 points, and we're about 27.5 points above standard in mathematics. Okay. So, again, in English learner progress, this is raw data. Next year, the state is telling us that we'll have a gauge indicator where they'll have compiled enough data over 3 years, the initial year, then last year, the first year, and this year's data as well. Okay? In terms of college and career readiness, we're in the blue area. We maintained, though we grew at 0.2%. Okay, and chronic absenteeism, one of the things I thought would be interesting is to look at what the other districts have in terms of raw data. So while I mentioned earlier we can't compare the gauge itself in terms of the color, because you'll notice all of our districts in the local area are all rated in the yellow, but you can compare the raw data. So our absenteeism rate is at 7.8% chronically absent, and we decrease that, which is a good thing, by 0.2%. And then you can see there the chronic absentee rates for Luciamar, Atascadero Unified, and Paso Robles Joint Unified. And it's interesting to note that, you know, even though those raw numbers are quite different, they're all rated within the yellow and the color gauge. Okay? In terms of graduation rate, we're in the blue, similar to last year, same as last year. We maintained but increased, again, 0.2% with a 96% graduation rate. And you can see the raw numbers of the other local districts there as well. Okay. Suspension rate, this is the only indicator where, you know, we moved in the wrong way. So we increased our suspension rate by just 0.3%, which is considered an increase. And we're at 2.8% suspension rate, who are suspended at least one time. And again, you can compare the raw data to outlying districts. So CMR at 3.6, Atascadero at 4, and Paso Robles at 6.6%. Please.
If you don't mind, Rick, this is one that I think is interesting. Mm-hmm. Because notice how San Luis Coastal, we're in the orange, but we have only 2.8% suspended at least once. Notice that? And then notice Atascadero is in the green because it declined. However, they're at 4%. Right? I think that's the classic example of what Rick was saying, is exactly. You can't compare color to color.
Okay. Thank you. On to the next one. So in summary, in English language arts, math, college and career, and suspension rate, we're all in the green areas. Graduation rate was highest in the blue area. No EL score on account of new LPAC assessment. And then chronic absenteeism was the only area in yellow, and that continues to be a focus for all of our schools. And then at the bottom, Mandy, if you go down there, there's a link to visit the California School Dashboard webpage where you can review schools individually, you know, as well as district scores for the last 3 years. That data is available.
Any questions, discussion? Mr. Unger.
Well, I'd just also point out that another great resource is through EdSource, mm-hmm. and they have a tool that you can actually compare district to district and site to site, and I think that's valuable for people who might be interested in this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
A lot. Thanks. Okay, next is 10.05, nomination to CSBA Delegate Assembly Region 9C. Dr. Crick.
Yes, I'd like to bring to your attention that CSBA, California School Board Association, has a statewide delegation of representatives who are trustees on school boards, as you know. And in our case, Region 9C We have two delegates with staggered terms. Mr. Buckman is our delegate representative. He was reelected in 2017, and he has indicated an interest in serving another term. So CSBA is presently soliciting nominations from member districts due January 7th, which is why this is before you tonight. And the board will need to make a decision to meet this deadline. And CSBA will distribute ballots for the election in the spring.
Thank you. And I would like to nominate Mr. Buckman to continue in this position if he is so willing. Okay, any discussion? All right, we have a motion by me, a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Carry on. Next is 10.06, approve board member pay for permissible absence.
Yes, I would like to request permission from the board to approve the absences from Marilyn Roger as well as Mrs. Sheffer. In both cases, hardship and illness. But in both of these cases, I feel it meets the terms for the requirements to approve their absences from the November 14th, 19th meetings for Mrs. Roger, as well as the November 19th for Mrs. Sheffer.
Any discussion? Mr. Unger?
I move approval of item 10.06.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Next is 10.07, approve increases to minimum wage and substitute salary schedule. Ms. McGrath.
Thank you. Presenting on behalf of Mrs. Newland tonight. Tonight, the minimum wage is changing. Therefore, Human Resources did a thorough job at looking at the positions that might be impacted and therefore are suggesting these adjustments in order to meet the requirement and to make the other needed adjustments to keep a balanced scale.
Any discussion, questions? Mr. Millard.
I don't have a question. I'm going to move it.
Please.
I said I don't have a question. I was going to move the item.
Okay. Right. We have a motion. Yeah. Motion by Mr. Millard, second by Mr. Unger. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That was easy. All right. 10.08. Measure D, design build modification number 4.
Yeah, so we, with the opening of the Student Support Services building, the current office building and classrooms are going to be the next phase at Measure D at Morro Bay High School. So this first GMP amendment was basically kind of what we did at the 100 building at San Luis Obispo High School, which was where we go in, we do all of the abatement, we can do the demolition. Then we can actually have the contractors come in because they get a much better idea of what the job entails, which in turn hopefully means that we get better response in terms of bids and and numbers as we move forward in terms of the unknowns. Mr. Holcomb actually went to this bid opening with Acme, so he was there when the bids opened. We had a wide range in terms of overall numbers. The bid that we're bringing to the board tonight was actually the low bid in terms of abatement and demolition together. The demo is separate in terms of it was two different bids. So one was the actual abatement bid. The second is the actual demolition bid. The reason why they've separated those is the abatement can get done early on, but they don't want to demo the roof and some of the other areas until they need to.
Okay, any questions? Discussion? This is an action item to approve this modification. Anyone up to making a motion? Mr. Millard.
Sorry. I will move approval of the Measure D design build modification number 4, setting a GMP for Morro Bay High School's building B, soft demolition and abatement.
I'll second. Motion by Mr. Millar, second by me. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Great. Okay. Next is our proposed revisions to Board Bylaw 9324, minutes and recording.
Thank you. Just to remind you, this is the board bylaw that we looked at previously, but because we had a couple of people absent, you asked for me to bring it back because it does require a little discussion and your feedback. So I want to bring your attention to the section that you'll find on recordings. So if you'll remember, it's been back a little bit. We put this information in Friday notes for you to kind of contemplate. So you'll know that we have taken this through the regular process, and typically Mr. Buckman and Ms. Sheffer can kind of come to consensus around adjustments that are suggested from the subcommittee, but this is one that they thought it would be better to bring forward to you for some discussion and your feedback. So the section I want to bring your attention to is the last paragraph, where the gamut suggestion says any district recording may be erased or destroyed 30 days after the meeting. Recordings made at the direction of the board during a meeting are public records. You will see there that we're looking for kind of a, you know, an open discussion, maybe the pros and cons around this. And so the question before you would be, should recordings be kept for longer than the 30 days?
Mr. Unger.
So when we say any recordings made at the direction of the district during a public meeting or public records, and by virtue of our approving the contract, for example, with AGP, doesn't that mean the board is directing the recordings of the meetings, and therefore are they not public records?
I'm not sure I followed you.
Okay. So by virtue of the fact that we approve the budget and we approve mm-hmm. the spending of money out of the mm-hmm. budget and we have a contract with AGP, mm-hmm. and we approve all of that, mm-hmm. so it would make sense to me that by virtue of that fact, we have given direction that our meetings will be recorded. Mm-hmm. So doesn't that automatically mean that we have that we've directed these to happen and they become public records?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm not opposed to destroying anything we don't need to keep. I think we should get rid of things that we don't need mm-hmm. and keep the things that are public records and the things that we do need to keep.
Mm-hmm. And I think the question will come down to the amount of time.
Right.
So if sounds like your perspective is don't keep it longer than you're legally required to keep it.
That would be, where I would come down on this, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know what that amount of time is?
Yes, we did look that up, and I believe it's the 30 days.
So that's the question. And as presented, it indicates the 30 days. But so that's the discussion is around that, is mine. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
The question before you, right. Should recordings be kept longer than the 30 days as suggested?
Mr. Millar.
I'm not sure that the recordings are actually the official minutes of the school board, since it conflicts with earlier discussion about written minutes done by the clerk. So if they're not official records of our meetings, then why do we need to keep them at all? And maybe mm-hmm. 30 days would represent a reasonable cautionary period of time to retain them. So mm-hmm. that's my thoughts on that. And I'd hate to burden staff with maintaining recordings for in perpetuity.
So just to clarify Mr. Millar's statement, then the written minutes are the official record of a meeting.
Correct.
Thank you. All right. Anything further? then this is an action item tonight?
This was brought back as a first reading, so to follow our typical pattern.
Right. We didn't bring it back as a second. Okay, so this will come back
as a second reading
at the next. As a second reading on the consent agenda.
Correct.
If there's no further discussion. Okay, thank you.
Correct.
Yeah,
thank you.
Forgotten that this we had carried this over as a first reading. Okay, thank you. All right. We are moving on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. Approval of certificated and classified personnel items, that was 11.01. 11.02, approval of furniture and equipment request. 11.03, approval of purchase orders and Cal card purchases. 11.04, approval of warrants and payroll. 11.05, proposed new board policy 1313, civility, second reading. 11.06, proposed revisions to board policy 4119.22, 4219.22, 4319.22, dress and grooming, second reading. Mr. Millar.
I'll move items 11.01 through 11.06.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. 12.02, advance agenda. Anything? All right. 13.01, reports by board members. Mr. Unger.
I just want to say that I was able to go to the Teach Mini Mall. And it's a great experience. The fourth graders create projects. They market them. They sell them. And then the proceeds go to charity. It's very, very nice. I was welcome to Sensheimer and got a chance to visit some great classes at Sensheimer. And I really want to pay kudos to Sandy Green, who's a second grade teacher at C.L. Smith. She invited me to come to her class and see, I think, what she called the Heritage Project. And what she did was to have each of the students go home and think about what their heritage was, where they came from, what some of the customs were. They then created visuals of where they had come from. She put them on a map with the locale from the student. And I will tell you, they were from all over the world. And it was really, really neat to see. So there were students from Thailand, Sweden, Iceland, Togo, China, the Philippines. It was really neat. And Sandy told me that it's really opened up conversations that they've been able to have in their classroom and really helped encourage inclusivity. So just, again, kudos to Mrs. Green.
Anything else? All right. Thank you all. Our next regular meeting will be Tuesday, January 14th. Everyone have a wonderful winter break, all you out there in the public. Thank you. Awesome.